Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu.
With a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
Left them and gone into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, "Let us go now to Bethlehem and see this thing that has taken place, which the Lord has made known to us." So they went with haste and found Mary and Joseph and the child lying in the manger. And when they saw this, they made known what had been told them about this child. And all who heard it were amazed at what the shepherds told them. But Mary treasured all these words and pondered them in her heart. The shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all they had heard and seen as it had been told them.
This is my winter song to you. The storm is coming soon, it rolls in from the sea. My voice a beacon in the night, my words will be your light to carry you to me. Is love alive? Is love alive? Is love?
Pastor Linda reflected on thin places in her message on the fourth Sunday of Advent. And I want to take us back to that for a moment, and we're going to spend some time in that. Thin places, as she shared with us, the ancients described these as small spaces that existed between heaven and earth. If you could find such a space, you'd be blessed by a moment of grace. And Barbara Brown Taylor, who's a preacher to preachers, always says it more beautifully than maybe anyone can. She describes thin places as the places on this earth where the veil between this world and the next is so sheer that it's easy to step right through. And so I start there because I had a few of those thin places on Christmas Eve. And I want to share a couple of those with you and invite you to just think about some of your own thin places that you experienced on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. The first one happened for me as the kids who are, we have kids right now in the second row, but at the 5 o'clock service, this row was packed with kids who were a lot younger than you guys. They were like 2, 3, 4 year olds. So these are really little ones. And they were here, and Omari started a little drummer boy. And I so wish I could do it because I can't recreate it. And the kids all went from being in their coloring books to like on top of this rail just watching this man begin that song. And for me, that was a first thin place that I encountered, that sheerness between earth and heaven and God breaking into that midst. And then, just a moment after that, I looked back, and I don't even know if they were officially hospitality people or they were just awesome folks like you guys who said, "Holy cow, there's not enough places for people to sit here." So they were like scrambling, looking around the building to try to find some chairs, and they found some like broken down, beat up metal chairs and started to put them in the back and just had them out all over the place because there wasn't enough seating in this space. And so for me, the thin place, the sheerness was holding that reality of there's so many folks that want to be together in worship to celebrate God coming into the world in this moment. And to know that 7 years ago, Pastor Linda came to this church and she was in her first year. And the community that was gathered was so, so small that they decided collectively that they didn't have enough people to have a Christmas Eve service. And so they decided as a small group to get in 2 cars and to go down the street to another church. And so another sheer place of the veil that was there for me. And then And then we got to go back. Sarah, my partner Sarah, and Linda's husband Mark prepared this amazing meal every Christmas Eve, and we celebrate together with our music team and folks that gather in that space. And I got to watch as my six-year-old, who's just learning the piano, sat at the piano, and last time she refused to do this, but this time she sat at the piano and played Jingle Bells for all of these amazing musicians. And for me, as like the least musically gifted person, not just in this room, but all of East Sacramento, it was a phenomenal gift to just witness this little six-year-old in all of her boldness. And then Brendan, who plays Joy to the World like nobody else, lifts her up in the air and she's doing her bow from like 6 feet in the air. And then moments later, I turn and watch, and Molly, who's our bass player, Molly has Eleanor up in the air, and they're laughing so hard that Eleanor just like is falling over every moment. And so again, these are just thin places for me. Standing in the back of the sanctuary at 5 and seeing as the lights went down and the candles started to be shared, and the light was just passed from person to person to person. And some of those people, I know some of the most intimate things of their lives, and other folks I've seen for the very first time. And just the gift of watching this collection of eclectic strangers become what I think the body of Christ really is in that moment, another thin place. And they're not all beautiful or celebratory thin places, right? Because I also got to hold space with a young person who really, a young woman who really wanted to be a mommy. And she was learning at Christmas Eve that what she thought was going to be a pregnancy wasn't. And so just holding that reality, again, it's another thin place where someone has their hopes of what could be, and they learn that it's not. And God holds us in that and doesn't let us go. Or another person in our community who is remembering back on the Christmas Eves, those thin places with her dad, who's not with her right now. And so thin places have this way of coming to us at Christmas in all of their variedness. And for most of us, it feels like Christmas is over. Like you went past some Christmas trees, I'm pretty sure, in getting here to this space, right? Maybe even your own Christmas trees are outside. You had to like drive around them to get out of the driveway. And that's certainly what the world tells us. Many of us have moved on. Like yesterday, actually, has become the equivalent of the day of after Thanksgiving. Like it's when we do the most shopping in the world. Like let's celebrate Jesus coming into the world. Let's go back to the malls. And so that's what we do. And now we're already looking ahead to New Year's Eve. You can already get your Valentine's cards. You can get those out. You can get them ready. Like don't slow down, people. Let's keep going. But here's the thing. We can't possibly soak in or feel all of the incarnation, all of what we call Emmanuel, God with us, in one day. We just can't do it. And the ancients, the ones who've gone before us, they knew that way better than I think I do, and maybe many of us do. And so what they did was they created the 12 days of Christmas. They created a whole season to say, we're going to spend time in this. And online stores and even brick and mortar stores, they still exist. They would have us tell us that that the 12 days of Christmas start mid-December and then they end on Christmas Day. But that's not true. Like, that's really not what the 12 days of Christmas are. They start on Christmas. They start at Christmas Eve as we begin that newness of a season, as we celebrate the incarnation. And they carry all the way beyond our New Year's celebrations. And we take time. And so it may, as you came into church and we were singing Christmas carols, you might have thought, like, did they not get the message? Like, Christmas already happened? What's going on? Did I step back in time? Are they confused? Maybe. We might be all of those things. It is totally possible. But we're also trying to hold the deep tradition of how we've been to say that we need these 12 days to try to live into this together. And I know it sounds like a difficult tradition to sustain these days, and maybe it is. And so we're going to live with it at least for this Sunday. And I'm going to invite us as we do that to think a little bit more about how we might contemplate God's breaking into the world in this very thin place in Bethlehem through an unwed mommy in the middle of nowhere, and wonder a little bit about how that might shape or what that might mean in our everyday lives. The Sunday after Christmas, which is today, the first Sunday of Christmas, is traditionally around the world, this is the lowest attendance worship Sunday in the whole church. They actually call it Associate Pastor Sunday. That's why Linda had me preach. Hey, can she get an amen? Can she get an amen? Finally. So in our church, thankfully, well, I don't know if it's thankfully, but the reality is in our church, the slowest attendance Sunday is when the California International Marathon goes by, because a lot of you guys run in it, and some of you go watch it, and some of you can't get here because the streets are closed. So while it's a miracle to have this many folks gathered together on the first Sunday of Christmas, we also break expectations in the most random ways by having this not be our lowest, but the first Sunday of Advent is our lowest, because that's the CIM Marathon. And maybe that's a little bit of what Christmas is, actually, taking those expectations and just turning them upside down. And it's a gift to be in a community that keeps doing that. And so I'm going to invite us to spend a little bit of time right now in Luke chapter 2. And the church globally is reading toward the end of this. We're going to try to look at chapter 2 as a whole. Which we don't always do, but we're going to try to do that. And many folks have never been to worship on the Sunday after Christmas, so you have no idea what the story is. So I'm going to share with you a little bit of what the story is. And to do that, I think I want to take us back to the beginning of chapter 2, which is where we started on Christmas Eve, and we're going to kind of move quickly through all of it. And here's the invitation. I want you to think as you witness this. I want you to wonder about where you are in this story, about where this story is meeting you and calling you into it. We're going to move from shepherds to a manger to a temple, and then from a temple to the home of Mary and Joseph, who are coming back and forth and then back to the temple. And so we're going to see some lines blurred, if that didn't move too fast for you, between the temple and shepherds in a field, because I think that's partly what God is constantly trying to blur for us, is where is the secular, where is the sacred, and is there really a line between the two? Maybe if there is, it's that thin place. So we're going to do that. There are younger folks among us, and we almost always err on the side of talking to the older folks among us. And so this morning, we're going to err on the side of talking to our young friends. And so we're going to do this with a video that I can't believe I'm going to show you, but I'm going to do it. And it's a video that tells the story, okay? It tells the story, and it's really directed to some of our youngest friends. So let's just watch, and we're going to meet some shepherds out in a field, and then we'll go from there. Again, I invite you to think about, where are you in this story? Due to copyright restrictions, we are not able to share the video from worship on our podcast. So those ancient shepherds, you saw the house that they lived in. You saw it. It was just the open space. Shepherds were the lowliest of lowly in Jesus's day. And so God could have chosen anybody to share this message of hope with. And God comes to some unhoused folks who were wandering across borders, across lines that people had drawn, across fences that people had put up. These unhoused folks are the folks that God chose to go to first to share this message of hope and good news. And so I wonder, as we prepare after our 11 o'clock service, we're going to move through and prepare this whole space to become a place for unhoused guests for the next week. And so why, if God would choose unhoused people that long ago, would God not choose those same folks to share a message of hope with this day? And so we're going to be a church that tries to live out the Christmas message by welcoming folks who don't have a roof over their head, just the stars that are in the sky or whatever the reality is that the weather brings. God chose them, and God might just choose the folks who are going to get off of a bus in just a couple of hours and walk through the doors. And Joe is already down in the kitchen right now starting to get some food ready, and maybe some of you all will join him after this to help. And we're going to welcome people who are unhoused this day, and maybe, just maybe, we'll be able to see them as beloved children of God, the first ones that should hear that message of hope, just like God did so long ago. The ancient shepherds were the first ones to experience that fragile hope born into the world in the form of an infant child. That infant child desperately needed the parents around him to love him, to hold him. There was nothing he could do by himself. He came into the world dependent on other folks. And God longs and needs us to step into that place and to hold that fragile hope and to help other people to experience that. We move in the story from these shepherds. They go out into the world to share the good news. And you can bet if you're going out to share some good news, and the good news is that hope is born in the form of this little child in the back of a barn, people are going to think you're kind of nuts, both back then and this day. So it's the good news is not going to always be easily understood by people around us. And so maybe some of these unhoused guests are going to have some good news for us, and we might find it challenging to understand what that is at this time or at this day, and we won't be the first to have done that. And for some reason, Luke moves really, really quickly from the shepherds in the field back to a temple. And so I want to take us there, because this is where Luke goes next in the story. And what we find is Mary and Joseph and the baby going into the temple. And it's not the priest who blesses the child. And this is often what I get. Like, people come to me and they'll say, will you pray for me for X, Y, or Z? Like, I don't have any, nor does Linda, even though I'm the associate. Like, neither one of us have any higher capacity to pray than anybody else does in this space. And so we witness that in Luke 2. What we witness is that the child comes, and it's Simeon and Anna. This is a man and a woman of many, many years who are there to bless this child. And Frederick Buechner tells a story. He talks about Simeon like this. Years before, Simeon had been told that he wouldn't die until he'd seen the Messiah with his own two eyes, and time for Simeon was running out. So when the moment finally came, one look through his cataract lenses was all it took. He asked if it would be all right to hold the baby in his arms, and they told him to go ahead, but be careful not to drop him. And so this man of many years held this small child. Lord, now lettest thou thy servant depart in peace according to thy word, for mine eyes have seen thy salvation. The baby playing with the fringes of his beard. The parents were pleased as punch, writes Buechner. And so he blessed them too for good measure. Then something about the mother stopped him, and his expression changed. What he saw in her face was a long way off, but it was there so plainly he couldn't pretend. A sword would pierce her through her soul. And he would rather have bitten off his tongue than said that to her, but in that holy place he felt he had no choice. And then he handed her back the baby and departed in something less than the perfect peace that he dreamed of for all those many, many years of waiting. And so we move with Luke, we move from the fields to the temple. And it moves so fast that it's hard to tell where the fields stop and the temple begins. At least it is for me. And then immediately we move from that moment to Jesus being from this infant to Jesus is 12. I have a six-year-old. And sometimes the last 6 years feel like a blur. And people tell me that she's going to be 12 before I know it. But still, it seems like what could have happened to Jesus in those 12 years? And nothing is what we're told from Luke. So we're left to just imagine how this child would have been raised and what it might have looked like. And then we encounter that Jesus is going back and forth with his family from their home all the way to Jerusalem for the Passover. So in their day, it would be like, it's such a big experience to get out of your place. You go with your whole community to the Passover celebration together. It's like we all did so much work just to simply get here today. And it took time for us to do that. Some of us, it was probably a painful experience to get everybody going. It can be a challenge when you've got little ones around, and you can imagine that. And so something happens in this story. Jesus and his family are going back and forth, and they arrive. Jesus arrives when he's 12 at the Passover. And they go up to the festival. It ends. The family goes back and they notice something. They notice that their 12-year-old is not with them. They've gone all the way back home, but the 12-year-old isn't there. So maybe you'll find yourself in this story as the neglectful parent that like was supposed to be paying attention to your child and realize that your child is not actually with you. Maybe some of us have had those moments, and you can imagine like the sheer just agony of the pain of not knowing where your child is. And if you haven't had that experience, like your heart just sinks, like whatever is below the ground to that space. And so the parents seem to go, they're looking around among the people, and then they go back to Jerusalem, and they're looking in all these different places, and they find Jesus there in the temple. And we imagine, a lot of times in our wider culture, we imagine that Jesus, I love this painter, we imagine that Jesus is the one who's standing at the chalkboard doing the teaching and that the rabbis are on the ground. That's what the way the story often gets told, but that's not what the story really says. The story says that Jesus is on the floor seated with them and he's listening to them. So Jesus is like rooting his life in the ancient tradition of the church, and the rabbis are sharing what they know, and Jesus is asking questions, and it goes back and forth in that moment. And finally, Jesus' parents get there, and he says what maybe any 12-year-old would say to their parents at that moment to try to deflect things. Well, why were you searching for me? They shouldn't have been looking. The child was supposed to be all the way back at home with them. So maybe you're like that 12-year-old and you're trying to throw people off around you. I don't know. Maybe some of us are in that space that we want a little bit of freedom. And some of the people around us who want to watch over us in love have been suffocating us. And we need to kind of get away from that just a little bit. You might be at that moment in some of your life. Or you might be like the parent, confused. Like you finally had this moment where you see your child again and that's what they share with you, and then you come back just not understanding. That's what we learned, that Mary and Joseph don't understand. And they went down with them and came to Nazareth, and Jesus was obedient to them. And his mother treasured all these things in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and in years and in divine and human favor. And so I wonder this morning, I wonder where you might be in this story of incarnation. It's a story that was told so, so long ago. It's a story that starts in fields with shepherds who are crossing boundaries, who don't feel like they have a home. And it's those folks that God chooses to come to first. Or maybe a little bit of you is like those animals that are in the barn, that are simply wandering around and you're not sure what you're even looking for at this moment. Or maybe you do feel like Mary, that you've had this amazing sense of hope born into your life, and now it is your task to try to watch over it, to try to hold on to that, to try to help it to grow and then to let it go out into its own freedom. Or maybe some among us are like Anna and Simeon. We've been in the temple for many, many, many years. And we have a gift of wisdom and blessing to share with folks who are coming into that space. Maybe some of us are like the folks traveling with Mary and Joseph. And it feels a little bit like the Christ child, even 3 days later, has gone lost. And hope was supposed to have come in Christmas Eve, and we're not quite sure where it is. And so we're going to need to spend these next couple of days with friends around us wondering about what that might mean and how that might come to us. Maybe as we find ourselves in this story, what we do is we start to dwell in it, which is exactly what God does at Christmas, comes to dwell among us. And so maybe that's our task this Christmas, is to dwell in the story as God dwells among us, and to see that this line between the shepherds in the field, the most lowly of lowly, and those who guard and are cherished within the temple, is itself a very thin place that God keeps breaking through. Perhaps as folks come in this afternoon, maybe some of them will be like Anna and Simeon. and they'll have a blessing for me or you to hear. May we be open to hearing that blessing of folks who are coming into this space. Almost 80 of you guys have already signed up to Reach in Love. And others, I'm sure, are going to do it and help this afternoon. Will we be able to hear and to see and to dwell in this story as we clean some bathrooms and prepare some food and sit at a table with a stranger who hasn't had a shower in a couple of days? Will we be able to see the folks that we're reaching in love to as maybe shepherds who are also the beloved children of God who God chose to come to first? To be sure, opening our church in the way that we do at Christmas is not going to solve a problem of homelessness. And it's not going to put an end to it. And the reality is that today is not an end of Christmas. God is going to keep calling us to do this work. And Howard Thurman says it most beautifully in The Work of Christmas. And this for me is a reminder that it is a call for us to dwell in this story, to trust that God dwells among us, and then to allow that to shape our way of being in the world together. Thurman says, "When the song of the angels is stilled, when the star in the sky is gone, when the kings and princes are home, when the shepherds are back in their flock, the work of Christmas begins. To find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to release the prisoners, to rebuild the nations, to bring peace among others, to make music in the heart. So may this Christmas season, may this work of Christmas be a thin place for you and for me as we dwell in a story of God dwelling among us. Amen."